Welcome in, everyone. This is The Hours. I am Mark, and I'm joined by my good friend, Frank Fogg, who is part of the Savvy team. He helps us with consulting, and he is in charge of dominating our free community. If you're not in our free community, you can find it at savvyfree.com. We have over 2,500 coaches in there, and it is nonstop basketball talk. Frank, welcome back to the podcast, my friend.
Yeah, I'm glad I got the good friend moniker as well. That was my litmus test for this episode.
Absolutely, man. I've known Frank for a handful of years and have enjoyed talking ball with him. And we've always talked about one day doing something basketball related, working together somehow, and happy to have him in the fold at Savvy working with our coaches. All right, before we start, I want to offer this up because we're running out of time here. We have a free trial. If you're part of our free community, you've probably seen us advertise this. If you're on our newsletter, you've probably gotten some emails. So if you want to be a part of our paid community for free, we're going to give you 7 days free. We just want as many coaches to have access to what we do because our mission is to revolutionize the way the game is taught and played. So we want to reach as many coaches as possible. So get in there. The only whether your season is nearing the end or it's over, the only constant between now and next season is the amount of time you have. So invest in yourself, do it for free. Come on, we would love to have you for 7 days. All right, Frank, this is going to be a combination mailbag and big question. So no pressure here, but all of our content at Savvy is we want it to be user driven, meaning the coaches that are investing in us, the things that they're curious about, the topics that they want to know about, the things that are relevant to their season, that's the content that we create. So the questions that we're getting in both the free and the paid community and through DMs and emails and social is, what are we doing come playoff time? What should I be doing? Should I be adjusting my practices? What should my film look like? So I'm going to leave this very open-ended to you. How do you approach the playoffs as a coach?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that so many coaches are talking about it, right? I think it's even more pressure to join it for those 7 days, get that free trial, get in the community, be around playoff coaches, be around coaches that are playing in the postseason, and let's share those ideas. I always subscribe to, as the season goes on, we want to cut our practice time back. We're able to go from 2 hours and 15 minutes to an hour and 45 to this time of year, we should be a well-oiled machine. We should be able to get in, get out anywhere from an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. Keeps our players fresh. As a coach, it helps guide my focus to what is the 1, 2, 3 things we got to be very intentional about, and what do we need to really focus on in order to continue to be successful. So number one thing is player fatigue. I always try to make sure that my players are playing at a high level and able to practice at a high level. And I think the easiest way to do that is to ask them, just, hey, Mark, how are your legs feeling today? I know, you know, we did this yesterday. How's our bodies feeling today? I know flu's going around. How are we health-wise? You know, sometimes your starting point guard might tell you, coach, man, mom worked late last night, later than I thought. I had to get up and take my brother to school this morning. I'm dragging a bit today. And I think, you know, making that adjustment to all right, maybe we won't do this, or we'll move this from full court to half court. We'll adjust and help keep our players fresh. That's number one for me.
When I was thinking about this too, instantly I thought practice time as well. I'll give you two things regarding practice if you're listening and curious about how to adjust your practice. I got this from Mike Neighbors. After maybe the first month of the season, he starts taking 5 minutes away every Monday. So every week we're going to decrease practice by 5 minutes, and that gets you to the sweet spot of like an hour to an hour and 15 really late in your season. I think depending on where you are, I think you're nearing like the back half of your conference district play. So I think an hour and a half max right now feels really good. And I think as you get in like those last couple weeks, maybe next week, I'm going an hour and 15. Playoffs, we're going hour and 15 to an hour. So that'd be one way to do it. And coaches will ask me, how much do you compete? I actually like to keep intensity level up because that's just who we are. That is part of our identity. We compete, we play hard. There's not a whole lot of, you know, walkthroughs that we would do unless it's on game day or extremely late, like playoff run. So keep intensity level high, meaning when we're in here, we're working hard, but we're going to massively shorten the volume. So think weight room. That'd be like doing, you know, one rep of like 90% of your max. Like it's going to not going to be a lot of volume. You're not going to be super fatigued, but it's going to be really, really high intensity. So that would be two things that I would suggest in practice.
Watching these college football bowl games and, you know, all 1,000 of them, there was one that I can't remember who it was. I can't remember what the situation was. I don't know if it was one of those overtime games where they ended up going 2-point conversions back and forth. But I remember the team that won, they interviewed the player that caught the 2-point conversion, whatever it was. And they asked him, hey, what'd you think when that play was called? And he said, man, we put that in day one of fall camp and we saved it for right now. And I just thought like, man, what a cool thing to know that you always have that and just that level of preparedness for now. Were they planning to save it for the Cheez-It Bowl? I don't know, but I think like just knowing that you have that and you're prepared is a big thing. So I always like looking at, can we take a play that we've ran in every game through district leading up to playoffs, and can we run it successfully again? And then can we add our counter to it? And I always like tagging it, if we called it 54 over, hey, 54 over, run it again. And again was our tag. And we all is our inside secret that, hey, now we're running the same play. They think it's the same play, but we know we're going to, instead of a back screen, it's going to be a down screen, or instead of a ball screen, it's going to be a rescreen. And then we know we're going to attack the other way. So I think that's an easy thing to add late. Whether you've practiced it all season or not, you can say, hey, we're running the same play, but when we call again, we're going to go into this. And I like doing that out of a timeout, just so players know, hey, we're going to run 54 and we're going to run 54 again. Everybody understands what again means, right? Good. We got Mark coming off the rescreen, right? Great. And so I think that's a low hanging fruit that you can grab, and you can add a counter to your plays. It could be a set play. It could be an ATO. It could be a call in driving space. It could be a baseline inbound, a sideline inbounds, whatever it is, but looking for those places where you can add that little wrinkle for an extra bucket.
Yeah, I like all that except for me coming off a rescreen. That's not my game, coach. I'm catch and shoot all day, man. All right, here's a couple of things that I'll plus one on that. So small tweaks can yield big changes. A lot of coaches will reach out and say, hey, should we add this? What do we think about this? Can you give me a play to get, you know, this player the ball here? It's like, yeah, you know, we could. But I know the mistakes that I've made in the past is like we would over prepare in the playoffs. We have this like weak gap and we're watching so much film and we see all these things that worked against our opponent. But at the end of the day, it is not us. And I think a savvy coach develops the lens that this fits what we do. I can picture my players running it. It would be very easy to install because these concepts fit with what we do. The more savvy I get, the more my eye is trained. It's a whole lot of no's. Like it's like 99 no's and one yes. Again, like the way we try to make decisions at Savvy, it's hell yes or no. So if you don't see something and it's like hell yes, I would just say no. I think the easier adjustment, and exactly what you're saying again for a counter to a set, I would actually add, pick your best action and go all in or double down on the counter to that action. So if you're a Rose series coach, if fingers is your go-to, then we double down on fan in the postseason because we know our opponents are preparing for our fingers cut. So we're going heavy fan. All right. Don't bury the lead in film sessions. Get straight to how this player, you're watching film of your opponent, how that player impacts the game. I have seen a lot of scouting reports or film on describing a player. He can handle it. He shoots it pretty good. He likes to put it on the floor, usually pulls up going left. It's like, I would want to be very targeted. And what's the number one way this player impacts the game? This dude or dudette gets to the rack. That's all I need to know. Like, just give me that. And that's 90% of the battle, instead of describing the player. Because when you give me the impact, you tell me exactly what I need to lock into when I'm defending this player. Sometimes it's just, this player just is really good on the boards. Like, going to get, you know, all the defensive rebounds and gets three offensive rebounds a game. Whatever it is, just pick the number one way. If you could only put one thing on the scouting report, what would you put? And then show them that on film.
Yeah, we actually just in with savvy thinking of coaching in the do's instead of the don'ts, is instead of describing a player as he's a really good driver, we say make him shoot the three. Or if he's a really good shooter, we would put that one line of make him dribble the basketball. And so when players think of number five, it's just one less step of he's a really good shooter. I need to make him drive. It's just number five has to drive every time he catches the ball. Every catch, we want it to be a dribble. And so, like you said, I think being very intentional in that. One thing we always did in film is we would look as coaches in terms of this is what we see. And we don't necessarily need to share all that with our players before the game. So we know that after a timeout, they like to go for a backdoor set. Or if they're starting the second quarter with possession, they like to go into an elevator screen. Or if they're on defense in the second half, start of the third, they like to trap the sideline inbounds. Those are all things we might mention. We're not necessarily putting it on paper. We're not putting it on the players to remember. We have an assistant coach, or as a head coach, I have my little note card that says second quarter or whenever they start with the ball, they like this. So those are all things that I might look for a little bit differently in a playoff game versus just a normal game. And then I'll take us a step back in terms of you talked about adding new stuff and fighting that urge. I think a good way to scratch that itch is to prepare for your special situations. So preparing for a baseline need two, baseline need three, sideline, full court, you're down four with 2 minutes to go, you're down eight with 2 minutes to go, you're up four, you're up eight, all those situations. And I like our practices, being a lock left team or having your defensive system, one of the benefits of that is you can spend less time on defense. You just kind of, hey, these are the guys, this is what we want them to do. And then you can move on and get back to you. So I like spending, we shoot, we go through like a late game Olympiad of sorts where it's one group versus another group. And we're just competing head to head in these situations. I have my plays. My assistant coach has his plays, and we're just seeing if we can score on each other. We like that action. Great. We take that. That's our special situation. And, you know, the game of basketball rewards those who are prepared. And so being in those situations and being able to say, hey, look, we're going to run box seven that we did 2 days ago at practice. We remember that when you're coming off here, you're coming off here, you're slipping there. Let's look for the slip. If it's not, we throw it in and now we're into this. And so as a coach, it lets you kind of scratch that itch. Maybe you find an action that's really good. And round two, you put it in as a set or as a real deal inbound, but it's fun for players. It keeps them competitive. It keeps it fresh at the end of the season. And it's a good way to work those time and score situations that you need to.
Yeah, I think everybody loves a good like slob at this point in the year. Also, there's probably something that you don't like about what you have in right now. Like, oh man, this situation has kind of come up and we've avoided it a little bit, but we don't really have a great play for this. That might be a time to add something. Always good to also have like a good blob or something against man or zone. All right, I'm going to give you two more quick ones here because I think this first one, the way that I kind of navigated the postseason as my career went and we normalize being in the postseason or playoffs. How could we take the pressure off of our players and just have them play a little bit more free, loosen up the mental game for them? And it was just begin with the end in mind. Like one thing we tried to be really intentional about was our schedule for the week. What did you know, if our first round playoff game was a Friday, we'll start at Friday. What do we want Friday to look and feel like? And then work yourself backwards. So that really helped. And then I was really intentional with our schedule and our itineraries. I would send it to the parents. I wanted the players to have itineraries, especially on game day. You might have a long road trip. You might be stopping to eat. I gave them a copy because I didn't want their thinking or I didn't want their mind clouded with like, where should I be? When do I need to be there? When are we eating? Do I need to bring a snack? I wanted to take care of all that so they could just focus on the game. And then last thing, it wouldn't be savvy if we weren't talking about your approach. Give your players confidence and inspire them to give you a little bit more because it is playoff time, baby. We need a little bit more from everybody. So like give me threes, give me fives, give me something. And what I mean by that is give me 3 more hours of sleep a week. Sleep during math or English, I'm just kidding. Sleep, you know, go to sleep 30 minutes earlier at night during the playoffs. Drink 3 more ounces of water. Give me 3 more minutes of film. Give me 3 more seconds of effort. Give me 3 more sprints in transition, 3 more touches in the huddle or whatever it is, but just get a little bit more out of your players. And if we do that times 12, let's assume we have 12 on the team, I think it's going to make a really big difference.
I mean, the approach is they're already going to be feeling it. You know, it's no bigger than game one, right? Like you prepped and prepared, like you probably have a very similar feeling to first playoff game that you did that Wednesday night before you started the first practice or whenever you started, right? So there's probably a lot of those same feelings and emotions. So I think reminding players, hey, we've been here before emotionally, we've been here. This is what we expected. We're right where we want to be, and let's go take care of business.
That was our mailbag and big question. And now we're going to go to everyone's favorite. In fact, I don't know if it's everyone's favorite. Maybe it is, but it's one of my faves. It's the game of the week. And I'm going to share this one. It is called two ball finishing because I got really creative and we had two balls in play and we were finishing. And the idea here is that we want to just plus one. Can we create like one read or decision when we're getting warmed up? So a lot of coaches ask, what do our practices look like? My answer is always get them warmed up. Once you're warmed up, compete right away. More 5-on-5 than small-sided games. In fact, if I'm doing small-sided games right now, they're quick, they're primes, we're sharpening the axe. But I would say 75% or more of our time is going to be spent 5-on-5. If we're not doing those things, we're shooting. So this would be a way where we could just get warmed up with a basketball. I'm underneath the goal. I've got 2 basketballs. We have our players spread out all around the court. And I'm just going to kick a ball out to anybody. And they're driving. And they're driving with the intent to shoot a 9. A 9 is a big advantage layup. If no one is in front of them, meaning they have this restricted area to themselves, they shoot a 9. If they don't have the restricted area, we give them a counter. So in this case, it is a little paint pull. So a little pull up in the paint would be our counter for this. So if somebody is in front, we have to stop and pull up. And what this does is it just creates a little bit of a read, but there's not going to be any contact because we're not warm yet. Also has us driving with vision. So how often do we have to tell players, hey, head up, see the floor, see the floor. This is going to ensure that you're driving with vision. So little way to shape the environment there. Okay. Later, I'm going to fast forward here. We added or we changed the constraint to where if we don't have a 9, we're going to stop and kick out. So right here in this example, our first driver drives in, she shoots a 9, and our second one is going to put 2 feet on the logo. They're going to hunt the world and then they're going to kick. So just we're starting to just work a couple different reads. So before practice starts, we're getting some finishing, we're getting some paint pulls, and we're getting some reads where we're kicking out. And then our players are also going 2 out. I can't remember if this was just habit or I asked them to do that or not. So game of the week, 2 ball finishing.
Yeah, love that. One thing I do want to point out, and this is just a tip, if you're wondering how to use your assistant coaches and practice better, or if you are an assistant coach, one thing you can do, just always have a ball in your hands. Like in that you saw a girl pass the ball and there was a miscommunication, ball goes flying across half court. So instead of wasting 30 seconds, assistant coach just threw the second ball in, assistant coach goes, gets a new ball, and now you're ready to go. So another good part of that drill that you can steal.
Yeah, I always have an extra ball in my hands. Head coach, assistant coach, didn't matter to me for that reason. We never wanted a player to stop and go chase a ball, but also bonus points if somebody takes a bad shot and you can just snipe that thing out of the air and throw your extra ball and deflect it out to the bleachers. That's always fun too.
Right.
Pin it off the backboard.
Yeah. I got to teach better. I think feedback loops are a really important part of practice and an area of practice where coaches can teach better. So a feedback loop is exactly what it sounds like. You're giving feedback in a constant loop. So I'll give you a scenario. A player goes in traffic. Maybe they have an 8. They go off 1 foot and they miss. So I can pull that player aside. Maybe we're just working like a one-on-one finishing. I pull that player aside. I talk to him or her. I say, hey, look, I think going off 2 feet there would be a better option. It gives you more power, more balance, more control of your body. So do this. Go get back in front of the line, and I want you to take this next rep, and I want you to go off 2 feet. So now that player goes off 2 feet. They're at the front of the line. They go off 2 feet. We can talk about the next thing now, and we've restarted that loop. So now maybe it's great job off 2 feet. You feel like you had more power and balance. They say, yes, great. Now we want to go body on, ball away, so you can get that ball up off the backboard or get the ball above the rim or whatever the next piece of feedback is. And you're just constantly giving them that feedback that is immediate, right when they need it. You don't have to say, hey, remember 3 reps ago you were doing kind of. It's immediate. And the big thing is it's specific. So we don't want to say, hey, you went off 1 foot there, go try again, right? We want to give them that answer and give them exactly what they need in order to be successful. And I love sending them to the front of the line so they can get one more rep right away instead of waiting 3-4 people, right back to the front of the line, go get behind, and I'll point to whoever's about to go, because that'll put them right back in the front of the line. So again, just being specific. And then when they do it, you want to praise them and be specific in that praise too. Instead of saying, hey, great job, say, hey, great job going off 2 feet. So now they've heard 2 feet is what they need to fix. They're back in line. I'm yelling a reminder before they go, hey, remember 2 feet right here. They go off 2 feet. Hey, great job going off 2 feet. And just that little bit of feedback. And if you can get all your coaches to do that, say you have 2 other coaches in the gym with you, now you're hitting your players at a higher teaching level than you would if you were to call them all up as a group at the end and talk about, hey, we need to be better going off 2 feet. And then you go into a shooting drill where they don't get that opportunity. So finding those parts of practice where you can get those feedback loops, you pick 2 or 3 players throughout practice to try to hit that with, it, I think, is a good starting point. You write it on your practice plan, 3 feedback loops. And I write the player's name and then what I corrected. The next morning, afternoon when we practice again, I can follow up with them again. Hey, man, I couldn't stop thinking about how great you did with fixing your feet yesterday. That was awesome. Let's see more of that today. And now you've just started that loop over again. So teach better, use feedback loops.
Awesome. Good. Well, Frank, thanks for joining us, man. Before we let everybody go here, I want to remind you, we are diving into our cohort this month on winning at the right time. So if you're curious about how to handle the playoffs, we're spending 4 weeks on that, on how to be a better communicator, how to give better feedback, like Frank just shared, to your teams. So what does February, a winning February, March, look like? We're going to spend 4 weeks with you. And if you want to get in one of these calls for free, join our free trial. Go to the link, sign up, and get all of our savvy resources, our community, and our consulting calls for free. In fact, if you reach out, if you're listening, I would encourage you, give us a like, give us a share, but also shoot me a DM. And if you're curious about what Savvy has to offer, I'll hop on a discovery call with you, answer all your questions, whether they're about Savvy basketball or anything else you want to talk about. So, Frank, thanks for being here. And to everybody, reminder, stay savvy. We'll see you next time.